This podcast is supported by ARC, Antenatal Results and Choices. ARC is the only UK nationwide charity offering non-directive, individualised information and support to parents who are making decisions around antenatal screening and diagnostic testing. They also provide specialised bereavement care for those who experience termination for medical reasons. For more information or support, please call ARC on 0207 713 7486.
Hello and welcome to Time to Talk TFMR, Termination for Medical Reasons. I'm Hayley and today we're joined by Janelle Ramsey. Janelle is from Leeds and she's a befriender of the Leeds SANS branch. And she also runs a group for parents who've decided to stop trying for more children. So welcome, Janelle. It's really lovely to have you here. We've been chatting off and on about this subject within baby loss and within termination for medical reasons for quite some time. So it's really nice to have you here finally.
Yeah, lovely to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So why don't we just start with what the group is that you have created and why, maybe, why you felt the need to do that?
Sure. So I spent maybe 2 years going to meetings, support meetings for baby loss. I had a termination for medical reasons in 2015. And I spent maybe 2 years going to meetings where I found that I was maybe just the only person sitting there who wasn't going on to have a successful subsequent pregnancy. You know, people would mention that they were, you know, pregnant in meetings. It was, I found it very frustrating. And I thought, if I ever get the chance to befriend and to help other people, then I think I'm going to set up a group for people who are either trying to conceive and that's not happening for them, or perhaps they've had children before and then the child that died was the last child that they held in their arms. And maybe also that people weren't able to try again after baby loss, and that decisions had been made for them, whether that's through sort of, you know, a health problem or perhaps medical negligence. And I just thought there's got to be a space for people whose baby that died is the last baby that they held. And that's, you know, it was a big sort of driving force for me. So that was the seed of the meetings, was me sort of, you know, just being frustrated that there wasn't anybody else, you know, in my position.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a sort of personal topic for me as well as for our listeners. I guess I just want to be honest about this as well, that's my experience. So after my TFMR, we did try and we did get pregnant again. But that pregnancy ended in an early miscarriage. And, you know, after that, it took quite a long time to kind of, what I was finding is that after each loss, it was just that the time to sort of mentally heal, emotionally heal, was becoming longer. And I don't know if, Janelle, if you want to just sort of explain a little bit of you hinted there about your own sort of feelings and stuff around, what happened for you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, anybody coming to our meetings will know sort of my history. But I had a termination for medical reasons in 2015. I don't discuss the sex of my baby or the name of my baby outside of confidential support groups because myself and my partner grieved very differently. So if I don't mention anything other than that, then
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah, good. We then, you know, went on to try to conceive. I also had a miscarriage and sort of kept going. And for, you know, full honesty, I did go on to have a subsequent pregnancy, but that didn't stop me from thinking there's a whole load of people in our community who haven't got the support that they need. So yeah, I didn't want to sort of, skip along merrily, you know, afterwards, because I knew that there was a need there. You know, if I felt that need for the 2 years that I spent at meetings, sort of feeling lonely and feeling quite maybe alone, not lonely, you know, as in there wasn't anybody else to talk to these things about. Because of that, I knew that there must be other people feeling exactly the same way, that needed to have a space where, you know, we weren't going to be talking about trying to conceive, and we weren't going to be talking about, you know, subsequent pregnancies, and we weren't going to have pregnancy announcements, those kind of things. I knew that there was a need for that. So I continued to, and as soon as we were able and had the sort of facilities, then I set the group up.
Yeah, I think it's quite amazing, really. So basically, what I'm hearing is that time period for you was such an impact that you, despite eventually becoming pregnant and having, a healthy living child after your losses, that time really stayed with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, I see it, on the social media. And we talk a lot about pregnancy after loss. We talk a lot about trying to conceive after loss. And as we should, I've been pregnant after loss.
Yeah.
My living son, came after two losses, miscarriages. Luna, my daughter from TFMR, she was a pregnancy after another miscarriage. So, mm-hmm. I've gone through those things too. Obviously, my pregnancy after Luna was, again, another pregnancy after loss. So these are important conversations to be having, and people do need support around this. But yeah, when it comes to you're making decisions around, or you're starting to think about, maybe that is it for me.
Mm.
It's really hard to find people talking about it.
Yeah.
It almost feels like, no, we don't want to be talking about that. People don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
Which I kind of get also, but I feel like we're letting down, like you said, there's a whole group of people who need the support and deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the people in our community, we listen to their stories, initially after loss, we spend sort of 6 months talking, in groups. And then all of a sudden I found that these people, they weren't coming, they weren't going to come back to meetings. I felt like giving up after sort of a year of going to meetings and me feeling like I'm the only one in this position. And although the meetings that I went to, they weren't pregnancy after loss, they weren't heavy with it. But obviously it is a part of loss, and people do get pregnant after loss, and people do, mention it in meetings.
I think there's also an assumption by sort of society, isn't there, of like you lose a baby, whether that's miscarriage, whether that's termination, whether that's stillbirth, whatever. But people just, I have been asked, while I am miscarrying, oh, you will try again though, right? There's this assumption.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the problem doesn't just sit in our community.
Mm.
I think it also sits in the wider community of, women who are child-free or childless, however they want to describe themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that parents, in general, I mean, women in particular, but parents in general who choose to be child-free, there is a certain, intake of breath and a that choice.
Yeah.
And I think that when people... I think maybe it's a comfort thing for people outside of our community where they think that, it's a healer, you'll be fixed, you won't want to talk about something as uncomfortable as baby loss with them. If anything, I think that you probably talk about baby loss more, whilst you are pregnant after loss. So in fact, it doesn't really, the outside community looking in thinking this will heal you, this will make you, this will fix you, this will make you stop talking about babies that have died. It doesn't, regardless whether you're pregnant or not, you still want to talk about your child that died.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably just find other people to talk to about it. So, it's an unhelpful point of view. And that unfortunately society sort of foists on you that, the minute you've had a loss, you must therefore try and conceive again. And that's, it's very hard. I've been, pregnant four times and I have one living child, so baby loss is very, very common, and it's very common for one person, yourself included, that the story to parenthood is not easy. And I think there's sometimes people think that there's a reason behind all of these things, that you go through, you endure all this hardship in order that you can then go on and sort of be this brilliant mother. And I think it's really, really unhelpful that people can't sit there and think, God, that's so traumatic.
Yeah.
We say this quite a lot in our meetings, you wouldn't, if somebody was in a horrific car crash, you wouldn't turn around to them the very next day and say, right, well, get behind that steering wheel. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You wouldn't, it's crazy. Somebody goes through something horrific where somebody dies, then you wouldn't turn around and say, well, yeah, but get back on it. You just wouldn't do that in any other circumstance. And I find it so, so weird that people are able to do that when it's baby loss, because that's somebody's child that we're talking about that has died. And it's probably one of the most traumatic events that somebody's going to go through, and yet we expect people just to sort of pick themselves up and dust themselves down and get back on that horse type thing.
Yeah.
And that isn't, you know, it's a really unhelpful attitude.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying there about, you know, the outside world sort of making these assumptions, I've definitely had people make those assumptions and ask me probably inappropriate questions at the time, you know, and also just women in general being asked, how many children do you have? Are you having children? If you answer none, they go, when are you having them? Are you, you know, what, like all these sort of inappropriate questions that society feels is okay to ask women. Mm-hmm. Men generally don't get asked these questions. And there's also, there are some people, some, usually it's women. I'm not sure if men are necessarily pushing for this, but when they've lost a baby, there can be some people that are like immediately they are wanting to get pregnant again. And then they run into sort of, it's not happening right away. Mm. And then you have all these messages around, yeah, why is it not happening for me? Mm. Which is kind of what I heard you saying as well, Janelle, when you were sort of sitting in these groups, and not necessarily that you were rushing into trying to have another baby straight away, but, you know, whether you meet that quickly or whether you meet that further down the road, if it's not happening for you, and it's happening to everyone else around you, or it feels like that, it is this very isolating experience.
Yeah, we had to wait for the results of some genetic testing to come back. And that took forever, mainly because the post-mortem showed a sort of series of midline structural anomalies, which led the medical professionals to believe it was one thing, and they went down that route, and it turned out not to be that. So they had to come back and then do some more genetic testing. So, I was waiting for the results of those to come back, because I didn't want to put myself under any more pressure from a pregnancy sort of point of view. So I think some of my frustrations were, number one, you know, maybe my own body, you know, number two, the pressures of having to maybe conform, maybe sort of like we've discussed, you know, get back on the horse, get pregnant again, that sort of thing. And my frustrations at not being able to do that, and my frustrations at other people seemingly having, I mean, this is in a loss community, you know, I mean,
yeah,
like, we're not that rational, you know, when we're talking about,
you know, exactly,
you know, situations, you know, so all these people that are, you know, surrounding me that have experienced baby loss, and, you know, and I'm jealous of them for their subsequent pregnancy, which is a perfectly normal, I think, reaction. But yeah, I mean, I was waiting because of genetic sort of testing. And that was a very, very long period of time to wait. Plus also I was over 40. So I genuinely sat there and thought, you know, I will not be a mother. And, you know, the last baby that I count, you know, will be my forever baby. And I think that feeling sort of, it stuck with me so much. Mm. It was such a, I mean, I actually felt quite a bond. I think maybe because I did wait so long afterwards. And that relationship that then developed, I think was very different to others that were sort of expressing their loss that had then become pregnant again.
I think that's a really interesting point, actually. So because you had to, you was an enforced wait because of the what you were trying to investigate, that meant that you, well, what you had was time with your baby who died.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was right or it was wrong or it made
no, but it's just the way it happened.
Yeah, I felt a very different relationship, I think, because I was facing, you know, that they would be my forever baby.
Yeah.
But also, I wasn't sure if I was comfortable enough to be saying those things in our meetings, because there is this sort of outward pressure from everybody else to have another baby. And it felt very uncomfortable to say it. But obviously, in healing without your baby, those are exactly the conversations that you can have.
Yes, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
So in the group, this group is for people who have either made the decision themselves or something's happened and the decision has been made for them, essentially, that there will be no more children after this loss.
Yeah.
So is that your feeling, what you sort of experienced about this bond that you were able to develop and to foster? Mm-hmm. Is that the basis of this group? Is that what you've taken?
Yeah. I mean, I think myself and Frances, the other lady who runs the group with me, we often observe that there's a level of honesty in healing without your baby that we don't see in the other groups that we facilitate. Mm. We found it's almost as if people have let go of a lot of things, not just the actual sort of like parenthood part of things, but lots of other things have been shed. So the inhibitions about talking about that, the inhibitions about how you talk about your child that died, quite a lot of things that we would find to be guarded, or, you know, maybe there's a bit of a barrier in other support groups, then they don't seem to be there in our group. There's a sort of very honest way of dealing with people's emotions in our groups, and I find it really, really refreshing. I always find the Healing Without Your Baby group a very uplifting group, which sounds odd because most people would say, oh, you know, it must be nice to run a pregnancy after loss group and things like that, and I get where those thoughts come from. But the Healing Without Your Baby, you see people maybe on a much, much bigger journey, and maybe on a much bigger journey from a personal point of view, from a sort of discovery point of view about themselves, and also that sort of that bigger bond, you know, with their babies that have died. So I think that there's it's an incredible group from that point of view, because there's, you know, there's an honesty that I just don't seem to get anywhere else.
So I'm going to say something that may be quite controversial. Hold on to your seats, people. But I would say that taking the path of either not having any children, so just let's just say that's not your thing, you don't want to have children, or in this case of what we're talking about in the realms of baby loss, taking the path of I'm stopping trying to conceive, there will be no more children after this baby, whether that's been enforced on you or whether that's a clear decision of yours, I would say that that path is a more difficult path to take to the having a living child after this loss, eventually having a living child to this loss. So being on that path of this may be my last one, and then making that decision, it's definitely the last one, that takes you. You have to go somewhere else, which is kind of what I'm hearing you talk about, Janelle, is what's happening in the groups. They have to find other ways to come to terms with the loss of the baby or the losses that they've had. Yeah. And that there's a different path. And I would, and, you know, people might agree or disagree with me, but I, you know, I have my experience and, you know, I found it incredibly difficult to come to the decision of stopping. And then when I did, there was such a freeing feeling.
Yeah. I think that's expressed, I think, quite often, that there's a, when people had allowed themselves the space and the time to say no, that once they had grieved that, you know, that sort of...
Yeah, it's another grief. Yeah.
It is, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And that's, I think, why I'm saying it's a more difficult path, because you're having another grief to contend with.
Yeah,
you have to do that, and I think that's why I'm saying it's a more difficult path. I mean, you could debate the semantics around that, I think, but
I can hear it now.
I'm going to have lots of sort of people coming and going, no, it's not more difficult. I don't know. But
I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's different and more challenging in other areas.
That's definitely more of a balanced way of saying it than maybe I did.
that's a befriender way of saying things, maybe.
Yes.
I think because you are choosing another loss when you decide, or you're having another loss forced upon you, you know, when you've been told that, you know, and we have somebody who comes who is unable to carry another child. They can get pregnant, but they're unable to carry another child through medical negligence. So, you know, to have that, you know, sort of forced upon you and to live with that secondary loss, it's a very, very difficult thing, you know, to deal with. And I think, you know, having that space to be able to sort of come in and say, it's so unfair, you know, it's really unfair, and to have everybody validate those feelings and say, you know, absolutely, yes, it is. And, you know, and have, you know, sort of your type of motherhood validated, you know, so whether we've got people in the room whose only child has died, or whether we have people in the room who have, you know, perhaps had children prior to their loss, to have your type of motherhood or fatherhood validated by people in the room in a similar situation where you're, you know, talking about sort of parenting a child that's died, I think can be quite liberating. because people then find that their unique situation is respected and is understood. And I think that that's a huge sort of release for some people, that yes, I can continue to parent my child that died, and I can be seen as a parent in that way, not necessarily by wider society, because, you know, we all know the problems with that, but with a particular group that will validate, you know, your feelings of parenthood. I think that's quite important. I think it's quite an important sort of thing to go through. So so it certainly offers that, you know, if this is the place that you come to be a parent, then, you know, you come to the meeting and you be a parent. You know, that's, you know, quite important, I think, for us.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about this episode last night. I was thinking about us recording. And, you know, so one of the things that I see sometimes on social media or whatever is when people have gone on to have their rainbow baby, which we'll get onto that term in a few minutes, because everybody understands what that term means. It's not a term that I'm particularly fond of. We'll discuss later. But they've gone on to have their living healthy baby after a loss. And there's lots of talk about how much healing that brings. And I don't doubt that it does. And as somebody who's not experienced that, you know, when we talk about triggers and stuff like that, that's something that still triggers me. So I know that within me, that's something that I'm still coming to terms with. It's something I'm still sort of grieving over, working through. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's how I take it. That's how it is for me. It's not about them. It's about me and what it means to me. So I was thinking about this last night, and I was thinking, the thing is, I do feel like there has been some healing happening. I think so. That's what it also feels like. It feels like my healing's maybe not validated, which then I thought, well, that's a bit odd, because of course it can be. I have been healing despite not having a living child after Luna. And I thought, well, what form is that healing took? And I thought, well, actually, Benjamin, my son who's alive, who was alive previous to Luna, so he was here before Luna, he has helped me with my healing. Mm-hmm. The sort of process of me kind of retraining as a psychotherapist, that's helped me with my healing. So I've sort of shed partly just what you were talking about earlier about sort of shedding parts of myself and changing and growing. That's been a part of my healing. So it just for me was a kind of reframing around what healing can look like.
Yeah.
Where it comes from.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that there's so much focus on the healing part of being pregnant again that, you know, almost all other forms of healing seem
pale in comparison. Yeah, exactly. And I just thought, that's not true, though.
Yeah.
It's not true. So I think I've really experienced that. I've really felt that. I've really kind of, it's made me, when I see things like that. And again, I am not telling people that, of course, they are feeling healing within their experience. Of course they are. I'm taking that on as very much my own thing, my own feelings. Like I said, it's an indication to me of where my healing still needs to be done. Mm-hmm. But I have been healing. So I think it's really, I think that's an important point to make, because again, we don't talk about it. There's a sort of assumption that you can only heal if you have another baby afterwards. And that's rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
That's completely rubbish. If that was the case, then there'd be thousands of women and families, couples that just would cease to function and live. And you mentioned there about the sort of differences between people who have living children before. That's my that's my experience, and those who don't. So the baby that's died, you know, they don't have any other children.
Yeah.
Do you have those two groups of people together in your group?
Yes.
Yeah. And how does that play out? How do they work with each other and interact?
Well, I think with any good support group, you sort of lay down your foundation for what people can expect, you know, at the start of the meeting. And so we have different ground rules for, you know, all of our different types of meetings. And for healing without your baby, we don't discuss living children if we have them. I think, you know, that there's only very few circumstances in which I think that we've mentioned living children. One is when it was a twin loss, So, okay. So you know, you can't really discuss one without the other. I think that unless we know that everybody in the group is either one or the other group, then we just don't talk about living children. Mm. And I think that gives everybody the space to talk about their child that died openly and honestly. And I think it gives people who don't have any children, living children, it gives them the space to talk about those feelings that we're just talking about now, where people, you know, look for fulfillment and look for healing in other aspects of their lives. And it's not that, you know, people who have had children previously aren't also seeking to do that, because they are. So it's a big leveler. So whilst people can feel healing with their child that's alive, there is also something that comes from, you know, seeking something else after loss. Yes, for fulfillment, for healing, and for purpose. You know, there's a purpose that goes along with parenthood. And I think that sort of lack of purpose can be something that then people channel into something else, whether that's, you know, we've had people who've moved countries, we've had people who went and got married, you know, they've been with their partner for years and years and years, and marriage was never on the table, and it was like, right, well, we are, you know, going to get married now, this is what we're going to become, a different type of couple than we thought that we would be. So there's lots and lots of different avenues that people sort of take. Pets are a big thing, but there's lots and lots of different ways that people talk about their healing. And if we don't talk about living children, and it's perfectly possible to spend 2 hours talking to other grief parents and bereaved parents without talking about living children. Yeah. So, you know, and so basically we just lay out the ground rules that we don't talk about living children, and everybody just gets along with it. We offer other groups to talk about living children, so, you know, nobody's missing out, if you see what I mean.
So
it works, it works really well.
I think that's really good and really you know, so what you said there, you know, about there being other groups to explore other issues that might come with having living children before this loss, there will be other issues that come with that. But having a space where you really, what this is about is being able to talk about the baby that's died and talk about how, because the other thing I picked up on was the sort of continuing bonds. That's basically, I think, what you were talking about, how you experienced your own journey was you had time to really develop your continuing bond, and how, I mean, that's a source of healing, that's a massive source of healing. Yeah. I mean, so I'm just going to be full disclosure here. Fiona's put a question up. Fiona's our producer, everyone who's listening. So she does this every once in a while. She puts in a question because she's interested. So she's asking, you know, you mentioned jealousy when others get pregnant after loss, you know, so you felt jealous. I felt that. Hands up, I felt that, you know, even within the loss community, I know how many losses they've had and what they've been through, and there can still be this part that comes up. And so she's saying, is this something that society allows us to express the jealousy we might have feeling for other people who become pregnant? I would say no.
I would say no as well.
I think that's a pretty hard no as well. It's a really because, I mean, how do you express that, really? How do you say, I'm really jealous of this person who I know has also had losses and things, but I'm feeling really pissed off right now about the fact that they're pregnant and I'm not. I mean, you just look like a real not nice person.
We're so hard on ourselves. And I think it's perfectly okay to be. Because, you know, when those situations arise and we start to feel, you know, jealous about a certain situation, then, I mean, a jealousy is an ugly feeling, but I think you've got to feel all the feelings. Otherwise, there's no point just picking and choosing which ones you think are acceptable, because, you know, they're feelings. They're all acceptable.
I agree. You know,
and it's crazy that I come back to, like, you know, in any other circumstance, when we're talking about, you know, the loss of a baby and then seeing somebody else, you know, start their journey to motherhood, or, you know, have their sort of fourth pregnancy, whatever that is, and us reacting to that in a jealous way, and then those feelings being frowned upon by society at large, I think all they do is sort of say that they don't understand. It just means that people don't understand baby loss.
You know, so I agree.
because it's perfectly, I mean, and it's also perfectly normal to feel jealous and also sort of happy stroke nervous for them.
Yeah,
I mean, I've certainly experienced that. You know, we wouldn't wish baby loss on anybody, you know, on our worst enemies. We wouldn't wish the situations that we've, you know, listened to other people describe or our own circumstances. We wouldn't wish those on anybody else ever.
Yeah.
So we know how difficult pregnancy can be, and we know, you know, how it's almost a miracle. We see it as a miracle when somebody gets to have a baby, plain sailing, you know. So whenever there's an announcement, you know, I always feel excited, nervous, and there is jealousy. There is jealousy there. And I think that that's perfectly, I think it's perfectly okay. I mean, you know, I think how we deal with it is a different matter. You know, how we express that jealousy can be, you know, but to actually physically feel it is okay. Expressing it in some ways might not be appropriate, but, you know.
Janelle, whatever do you mean? What? So, you know, me writing a really, you know, sarcastic text or something, it's maybe not appropriate. No, I would never do that. Well, I would never do that. But yeah,
you know,
but it is. Yeah, I know. I know totally what you mean. And it is. It's this kind of thing of being able to kind of recognize, okay, I'm feeling jealous. So the feeling, it's actual physical feeling that I feel. It's this pang. You know, so we talk about pangs, right? So it does feel, there's a something in my gut that just sort of goes, oh, that just kind of hurts, really.
Yeah.
And if we sort of really get curious about, okay, we're labeling it jealousy, what's actually here? And probably what we'll find is actually there's a lot of hurt, and it's our hurt. It's the being reminded of what we don't have. And I think that's what we do have and what we don't have, you know, we're being reminded of these things. And I think if you've made a decision to stop trying to conceive, or that decision has been made for you, and you're having to go through this other grief process, and you see somebody else who, for what you're seeing that they're not having to go through this other grief process. You feel it more keenly for yourself. You sort of just feel it more. And I think if we were just to admit that, you know, we're human and we feel these things, and yeah, it's part of our process. If we could be a bit more honest about it, then people probably actually would really understand. But because we don't talk about it, again, you know, because we don't talk about it, then people don't have a chance to really get behind it and understand what's behind that jealousy or that envy. I wanted us to just talk about rainbow babies, because Janelle, you and I both feel similar about this. I mean, I'm just, again, you know, full disclosure, I'm being very honest in this episode today. I'm honest in every episode, but I think this one, it's probably because it touches me more directly. Rainbow baby term doesn't really do it for me. Neither does angel babies. These terms don't really do it for me. I feel like it's got a slight toxic positivity slant to it for me. Whether I don't know if I'm right about that or not, but it does for me. It sort of feels a bit like it's the goal.
And also, I mean, we had a lady who comes to our general support meetings, has often said that she doesn't want her child to be the storm that she had to go through. So, I mean, and that's, you know, that I think that just sums it up perfectly. You know, the hugely traumatic event that is baby loss is not really something that we can, you know, compare and then, you know, sort of, and then it will always happen.
Exactly what it says to me. Like, but it will just always happen. Of course, there's a storm and then there's a rainbow. It always happens. Like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it doesn't. And it could be sort of, you know, this, you know, that assumption that, you know, everything will be okay because of something else, you know, and that something else happens to be a baby is quite unhelpful for, you know, for people in the loss community who don't go on to have a subsequent pregnancy. So I just think it's...
It's a bit reductionist, I guess, is what it is. It's a bit reductionist. And I've always kind of felt like, well, hang on a minute. So Luna was a rainbow baby, if we're going to use that term. So then, but because she didn't live, she's not. I don't understand. I don't know what this really means, actually. So only babies who get to live are rainbow babies. Yay. you know.
Yeah.
And it feels a little, I mean, it just feels like, oh, okay, so it doesn't belong to me. And I think that's maybe what it is that it feels like it's, you're only allowed to be part of that if you actually achieve the living yeah. baby afterwards. And I think you're right. It sort of takes away maybe, I think also because, okay, so Benjamin, my living son, he's technically a rainbow baby if we're, you know, using those terms. I've never thought of him as that. Mm. He's just Benjamin. And he's not just Benjamin, but you know what I mean? He's Benjamin yeah. and that's yeah. who he is. And he doesn't have this like rainbow identity thing, but yeah, mm. it's just felt a bit reductionist to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we call our, you know, it's pregnancy and parenting after loss.
Yeah.
The group that, you know, that we run, we don't, I try to avoid using the term rainbow because I know that it's quite divisive. I think certainly when we've looked at steering groups within SANS around when we used to, you know, meet up face to face and have sort of befriender mm-hmm. meetups, when we'd look at maybe certain aspects of support that we needed to explore further. Yeah, I mean, I was always the person saying, you know, writing on the flip chart, not everyone gets it, and then inverted, you know,
yeah.
quote buddy's rainbow, because there was always this sort of, even within the baby loss community, this sort of push for positivity and for rainbow and for, you know, all things coming, you know, bright and sunshine at the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm quite sure that even if you do have an in inverted commas rainbow baby, then it's not all plain sailing.
No, you know, exactly.
Parenting is not plain sailing, no matter, you know, what flavor of child you're, you know, you're having, whether it's rainbow or, you know, all these other sort of terms that people talk about.
Yeah, and I wonder if it can lead to, so I see quite often, you know, the people who do go on to have another baby afterwards, that I wonder if it can kind of lead to these feelings of like, oh, I mustn't complain now about being a mother and about being a parent, yeah. Because of the journey that I have, and that I've, you know, this is a baby after loss. And so it's my rainbow baby. I mustn't complain. And so, you know, how that might, it could facilitate people feeling like they can't, again, be honest about their feelings and be honest about that, you know what, you're always at different points in this journey. And just because something happened, you know, last year doesn't mean you've not
yeah.
in a different place this year, you know? So again, you know, people will use these terms because they feel it connects for them. And I think that that's absolutely fine. Like always, I would say, just bear in mind that not everybody
yeah.
attaches to these terms. Not everybody gets this so-called quote-unquote rainbow baby. And I would also say, because I've talked about this, is that, you know, there can be alternate ways of, you know, it doesn't have to be a baby, you know, it could be other ways of finding this rainbow, you know, this sort of growth. You know, we've talked about post-traumatic growth before and this change and healing. It doesn't always yeah. have to be in the form of a baby. So
yeah,
I think I sort of feel like this is a, again, I say this a lot, but we could have this conversation again around yeah. people sort of coming to terms with this, with stopping to conceive or having to sort of get heads around it's not going to happen for them. So we do this at the end of our episodes, this TFMR takeaway. So we'll end on this note for you, Janelle. You ready for it?
Yeah.
So you're going to ask you a question. You got to answer it. Okay. So what advice or piece of hope would you give to those who know that their baby who died is going to be their last baby?
I think firstly, that there are lots of other people in exactly the same situation that you're in that are doing just fine. They're healing, they're growing. They've got purpose in their lives. They turn up to the meetings. They laugh, they cry. So it is perfectly possible to go through incredibly traumatic events and move forward with hope and healing, and for it not to be centered upon anything other than the things that you wish to center it upon. So if you're wishing to center that upon personal growth, job change, moving country, getting pets, getting married, all those other things that can contribute to you growing and healing as a person, then they can. And society's insistence that it has to be a baby is misguided.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you, Janelle. It's been really lovely to speak with you.
Really great. I feel like I've got like a million and one things that I haven't said.
No, it always happens. Don't worry. Most people say, oh my God, I've got so many things that else I could say. And that's why I say, like, this is an ongoing conversation. We will come back to these because, yeah, it's such a huge topic. TFMR is a huge topic. And then within it, you have all these huge topics around it. So don't worry. This will not be our last episode talking about this for sure. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been really great having you and really great to meet you. See you in the flesh.
Yeah. Great. Really great to meet you as well. And thanks for everything that you're doing for the TFMR community, because, you know, it makes a big difference to people. So,
thank you.
Good on you.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. This ensures that you get all of our new episodes as soon as they're released, and you can find us on most podcasting platforms. Get in touch. We love hearing from you. Find us over on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Time to Talk TFMR and Twitter at Talk TFMR. That's all for this time. Thank you. And please take gentle care of yourselves.